Ah, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. And I certainly hope you are going to enjoy what we are going to talk about, because I have Dr. Chad Kinsella from Lander University. He is a political science professor, and we always have some interesting conversations when we sit down here. So how have you been doing, Chad?
I've been doing very well. Thank you.
And, you know, we had to change you. This is your third try, and I guess it's a charm today, right, with the snow and everything else?
Yes. Snow, earthquakes will not stop me from getting here. So it's an honor to be on an award-winning show. So, again, so I could not let, you know, the forces of nature try to stop me.
Okay.
It took a little while, but we're here.
Absolutely. And, of course, we're getting ready to have a lot of elections. We've got a lot of issues going on. We've got, a lot of division out there in the parties, and even within the parties, there's a lot of division. So I would be interested to know what your students are thinking about what's going on. Are they involved in the process?
Well, I kind of cheat because as a political scientist, again, we have, you know, political science students, and they're already kind of engaged. Very, very much engaged, and some of them work on many of the different campaigns. So they are engaged, and they're very excited about all the elections that are coming up, and I have some of them that are trying to encourage, you know, people that they know to run in primaries or run for office. So it's been a lot of fun kind of giving them some insight, and I got my start working in campaigns, working in a congressional office in Northern Kentucky. So it's kind of fun to kind of, you know, bring them in and say, you know, hey, here's what I used to do, and this might work for you, and kind of give them a little guidance. So it's fun. I can kind of live vicariously through them. So it's a lot of fun.
But how small a proportion of that is that to the whole campus over there at Lander?
To be fair, it is a smaller portion. And one of the things I belong to is the American Democracy Project, and that's one of the things we try to get students to get more engaged. How many people? I mean, really, if you go and look at a map, and if you look at Lander University and the surrounding areas, and kind of that area of Greenwood, again, it has the lowest turnout in the county. And you have a lot of students living there, and even though they registered to vote, a lot of them, you know, still don't vote. So. I don't think that that's unique among Lander's campus. I think that, again, youth voting, if you look at it, and again, we talked about 2008, it was like, oh, Obama got all these youth voters out, and there was a bump in youth voting, but ultimately it's still much far below voting of any other age group. So it is very, very low still.
Now, of course, the big issue out there is Obamacare and the youth need to sign up for this, and President Obama and his team are certainly going to some creative routes to try to get from Pajama Boy to, they've had cartoon characters, they have famous personalities. Have you all had any discussion about this in class?
We do occasionally, and I wish we taught more of a policy-oriented class, and I wish some of my 101 students would kind of talk about it more often. It is really interesting, and you know, now that you mention that, it would be fun to do kind of an informal poll of some of my students to see how many of them actually, you know, did any of them sign up? I'm getting the sense, just because nobody really says anything, that I wonder how many of them, if any of them, had actually signed up. So it's really, it is. It's very interesting. It's very controversial. They're having problems, to put put it very mildly, they've had problems with the rollout. They have, you know, setbacks, pushing things back. The taxes are in place, but kind of we're in there. So it's very, very interesting. And I think some of the analysis has shown that, again, the youth, again, people who voted overwhelmingly for the president, you know, might be the ones who get the most sticker shock out of this whole thing. So It's kind of been, you know, I am surprised, I guess, I really need to do an informal poll in my classes and say, how many of you signed up? What do you think about this? So I've had some conversations with some of the more kind of in-tune students about some of the different things, and kind of got a variety of opinions. Some people like it, some people, you know, don't like it. So it is kind of interesting. And now I'm even more curious. I should do an informal poll.
Well, you'll have to let me know what the results of this informal poll.
I will definitely have to email or call and let you know what happened. happens, because I am now very, very curious. I should have thought of this, being a political scientist. We love polls, so this is something I should have done long ago. But so this would be very interesting to see. But, you know, it's not talked about, and I get the sense that I wonder really if anybody's actually, any of my students have ever signed up for
or
it.
Or if they've even gone online and looked at it.
That
would be the thing. And, of course, the fact that they can stay on their parents' insurance till they're 26.
And maybe that's why they haven't gone to it.
Right.
So, and maybe that's something, you know, good for, I guess, for them, is that they can stay on there. I don't know about the parents, if they're going to like that very much. I couldn't imagine the conversation of going and telling my parents that I was going to stay on their insurance until I was 26. They would not have liked that. But, yeah, so there's a lot of...
Well, at Thanksgiving, they had that commercial out there about, Mom, Dad, we've got to have this conversation. You've got to sign. I want you, parents, telling their children to sign up for the healthcare system.
It's really interesting. And I have my own opinions. And again, I'm sure at some point there are a lot of people watching this, and we'll get some analysis. But, you know, it seems like there's a lot of people who have either signed up and not paid. A lot of people are going and signing up, but they're, you know, going straight into Medicaid. So there are some kind of,
Trying to move my age forward so I can get into Medicare. You know, yeah. I just decided maybe that's the best place to go.
It's very interesting, and you know, some of the preliminary numbers really aren't all that encouraging, and you know, and they are doing major pushes, but it doesn't seem like, again, from the preliminary numbers, that there's a whole lot of that they're getting the support that they need and want to make this program a success. But again, we will see. There's some good things in there that seem to work, and even things that Republicans had been saying for years to try to do. And then there's some other things that, you know, are a little iffy, if you will, that you know, may or may not work, or you know, we'll see. So it's kind of interesting.
What do you think about the spinning of all the numbers? I mean, you're a number person. What do you think about, you know, here we have at one point the White House saying that these are the figures, and then somebody else comes out and says, no, these are the figures, when we have the sign up and everything. What do you think about what is happening out there?
Well, I mean, it's a political game. And there's going to be, well, you know, like the Bill O'Reilly, you know, the no spin zone. And as much as he likes to say that's the no spin zone, there's a lot of spin going on his show as well.
Really? I never knew that. You mean Waters World and all that has spin to it?
So it's political. It's a political game. And again, being that the midterm elections are coming up, Obama and the Democrats are very vested at this point to say that Obamacare is working, so they have to spin numbers in one way. Republicans are just as vested in saying that, you know, that the program is not working. So, and really, whether it is or isn't, I mean, both parties have kind of sunk in and said that, you know, this coming 2014 election is about Obamacare. So, I mean, if that being the case, you know, they both have to spin the numbers to their advantage. So, you know, it's politics.
It's so politics.
Definitely politics. So it's in their best interest at this point for Democrats to make it look good, Republicans to make it look bad, because ultimately there's maybe evidence that, you know, this, maybe even the U.S. Senate depends on, you know, how people perceive whether it's working or not working.
So. Absolutely. Hey, I'm here with Chad Kinsella. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, but you stay here. He just brought up the Senate. That means we have a candidate from South Carolina. Maybe we ought to talk a little bit about the battle that's enveloping right here in South Carolina. So don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're going with the flow this afternoon. We are talking with Chad Kinsella, and of course he is Dr. Chad Kinsella from over there at Lander University. He is a political science professor over there, and I actually think I almost stumped the professor here for a moment talking about what students are signing up for Obamacare. You're going to have to check this out now.
I'm definitely going to have to informal poll and kind of just ask people in my different classes and just find out. I wonder how many of them, you know, have, you know, signed up, how many of them, you know, are planning to stay on their parents' insurance, you know, and how many of them care. And I've had some conversations with a couple of them, maybe some of them more involved in kind of getting their various opinions on the Affordable Health Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. But, you know, it would be really interesting to do an informal poll and see, you know.
It'd be interesting just to know if any of them have been on the website.
I would love to know that as well. I mean, have you even looked, you know, is this something actually in their kind of something that
their,
they even,
their sphere.
Yeah, in their sphere of something that they're thinking about at all. And you know, I don't know. And I'd be very curious to find out. So I'll have to do that and maybe give you it would be fun to just poll the entire Lander population, but
it would be
very interesting to, you know, find out, you know, what they think about it, if they think at all about it, and if they've gone onto the website, have they signed up, or, you know, what's happening. So that is a very good question, and I that is something outside of just a few students that I've talked to. You know, I haven't talked to I've never gotten a sense from the broader student body or just the people in my classes of where what they think about the whole thing.
That's cool. Glad to have given you a thought process here today.
Definitely. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, I have access to these students, and they're kind of I am now leading the class, so one of those things. I can have an informal poll today and say, hey, what do you think about this? I'm definitely going to have to do that. You exercise my power as kind of the head of the class.
As leader of the class.
It's kind of, you know, make them my guinea pigs for just a few moments. So
And you didn't have to get elected to that.
No.
You just got the job.
Just appointed. Yes. Just appointed. Yes.
Well, you know, speaking of that, we do have a big election coming up. Senator Lindsey Graham is up for re-election, as is Tim Scott also. In fact, all of the House of Representatives are up for re-election too. But the one that's garnishing the most notice and the most ire, I guess we could say, is Senator Lindsey Graham.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Senator Graham is definitely, I would say that again, from the polling numbers, and if you look at any of the national websites, and if you look at, you know, House races and stuff, you know, there's no real action outside of Senator Graham's seat in South Carolina. I am very confident. If you know, you can go to any other of the webs, look anywhere, and you know, most people are very confident that, again, you know, the seven seats here in South Carolina are going to be very stable. I don't see that, you know, any movement there, barring some sort of major shake up of some kind or a scandal, which I also don't perceive. You know, I think it's going to stay. So really, the only political action, you know, as far as on the national level, is, you know, Senator Graham. So and I think it seems like he's got a fight on his hands. You know, there's some things I think that have worked in his favor, but you know, it's going to be very, very interesting.
Well, of course, we've got Nancy Mace. Mm-hmm. Nancy Mace. We've got Richard Cash. And there's a couple
Bright,
of Bright.
Yeah.
I haven't heard much about Bright, though. He doesn't seem very actively Bright here today.
You know, he actually came to Lander. One of my students kind of set up and had him come to Lander. And, you know, this was right before he made his announcement. He made his announcement, and then it's been very quiet. So,
right.
And you know, and the sheer fact that you have so many people running against Senator Graham, actually, I think probably runs in his favor. Well, we'll see. I guess the key thing will be he could be in trouble if he doesn't get over that 50% mark, and then if there's a runoff where he has to face off against one other candidate by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands right now, with you know, several different people kind of dividing, you know, the you know, more conservative vote, and because South Carolina, which is, I always came from a closed primary, you have an open primary system, you know, you could have a lot of independents and maybe even Democrats who could show up and you know,
Swing the vote,
or and again, it could be like football. You know, it's a game of inches. I think so. You know, or just a couple people showing up could sway it one way or another. So it could be very interesting. But I think that the fact that you had so many people line up against him could work in his favor, perhaps.
Well, I think one of the things that works in his favor is money.
Yes. Well, it always pays to be an incumbent. It is, if you ever look, it's like opensecrets.org, and it's this kind of independent group, and they look at a lot of different lobbying and lobbying money and stuff like that. One of the things they've measured since 1964, the House and Senate, how many incumbents actually lose, and really it's rounding up, the running average is 90% of incumbents win. And you can even look at 1994, you can look at 2006, you can look at 2010, and really the number of incumbents who actually lose nationwide is fairly few. So, and one of the reasons...
Why is that?
Well, they have
money.
A name. Money. I tease my class. I said, look, if you had money to throw in on a campaign, and you wanted to make sure that you were getting the most bang for your buck. If you're a political action committee, you had $10,000 to put down. If you're an individual and you're going to put down, you know, the maximum, and you don't want to waste your money, you know, who are you going to put your money on? I say, what would you do if I told you that you could go up to, I guess, North Carolina and go to a casino and play a game where you have a 90% chance of winning? You know, I would put my
money.
I would put
my money there.
I hate losing, so I don't gamble a whole lot. But if I could play a game where I have a 90% chance of winning, or maybe even better, I'm putting my money down. So I mean, it is money. Money is a big part of it, and it seems to be. Yeah, he's raised an incredible amount of money, and I think that's only going to help because he can put out the airwaves. He can communicate his message much better. And again, there's a smaller pot between, again, all of his competitors. So, again, they're having to split up the money, split up the vote, and I think that only, again, helps. So, yes, money is definitely as an undeniable, part of politics. Again, there's a lot of discussion whether it's good or bad, but it is here. And, again, the Supreme Court, it's basically protected under freedom of speech. So, therefore, it is a part of the political game, and it is very, very important. And incumbents get it. By leaps and bounds.
Now, but very one of the things that I thought when Nancy Mace got into the race, being from the Citadel, if she could garner the support of the Citadel and all the people in that she might have a better chance.
Perhaps. And it's difficult in a primary to know, you know, what who's going to show. It's not a shotgun, so to speak. It's a rifle. It's very, very targeted. And if you look at, you know, there really are a very smaller number of primary voters. Mm-hmm. And so really you have to kind of go after those people. Citadel is ultimately, you know, there's a whole lot of graduates from the Citadel, and that might help her. How many of them are still in the state? How many of them vote in the Republican primary? You know, can she get a hold of all of those different people? So that, you know, it could be an advantage, you know, we'll see.
Sure.
And Citadel is very powerful. One of my friends who's was a state senator in Kentucky, he retired, and the person who took over for him was a Citadel graduate. So again, the reach of the Citadel is very far. So they've taken over my former state Senate seat in Northern Kentucky, of all things. So there's a Citadel grad there. So there is a big reach, and that is a very powerful and a very tight-knit organization, university, I should say. Actually, and I'm going there in a week to the symposium on Southern politics. So there's a whole lot of people from across the country that will go to the Citadel and talk about Southern politics. And so it is, it's a very political place, and they're very involved and very tight-knit. Tight community. So that could be something definitely in her favor. Absolutely.
Sure. Well, I mean, I just was looking at, you know, from that standpoint, what she could bring to the table as far as raising money. And as far as making connections out there.
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah, there are people that graduate from that the Citadel, that, you know, there's a vast, you know, people to be tapped with money. And there are a lot of the Citadel graduates that are still here. So, I mean, yes, that is definitely, I mean, everything that can be used to an advantage in a political campaign, you know, must be used. And I'm sure that she is, you know, tapping that. And, she does have some historical, being the first female to graduate of the Citadel, you know, that's something big. And, it's quite interesting also, Republicans have a woman problem, so to speak. There is that gender gap, and it has it was the most pronounced in 2012, where men were more likely to vote Republican and women were much more likely to vote Democrat. So that is something. Perhaps because it is Senator Graham, I'm sure that the National Party wouldn't be involved, but that is something perhaps that could help the Republicans something that she, definitely could talk about and put out there. So definitely something important.
And she's a small businessman and person.
She's got a lot of the key credentials of necessary to fill those shoes what is needed and what is wanted in the party. So definitely a small business graduate of the Citadel. A woman is very, very helpful, especially for the Republican Party at this point. So it all matters.
Ultimately, it comes down to money, and I think she's got about $500,000. And how much does Lindsay have? 5, 6, 7 million.
Yes, it's a considerable amount. And again, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be very hard to contend
with.
There's
a song. Yes. Money makes the world go round the world. Go round, there you go.
And especially politics.
Especially
politics. It is crucial in politics. Money doesn't really make the campaign. You got it without it. There was a politician out in California is the mother's milk of politics, and really that is the absolute truth. So very important.
One thing that I think would be interesting, Chad, mm-hmm. What if you only could have so much money to run in a political campaign? What if everybody had to get out there and be a grassroots campaigner? What would be the effect of that? What if you said there was only, 20 or 50,000 or maybe 100,000? We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to let Chad answer that question. And Gracie, don't get so excited.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, talking to Dr. Chad Kinsella. Hey, if you got a question you want to throw out there for us to gnaw on today, you can do that. 229-7984. That's 229-7984. And Chad, I was just asking you, what would be the effect if there was only, let's say you could only spend $100,000 on a campaign, all candidates, that was it. What effect would that have on things?
It would be dramatic. There are, was it New Zealand, I think Australia, many Western European democracies, many democracies across the world have campaign limits, donation limits, and how much they can spend. So the effects would be pretty much dramatic, probably almost overnight. It's hard to tell. Now, again, all of those other democracies would have, parliamentary, so it's a different setup than what we have here in the United States. My thought would be that, you'd have an immediate effect in the primaries, probably not an effect in the general election for a while. As we talk about gerrymandering, if you look across the country at this point, there are very, very few states that are not dominated by one party or another. And again, what they've done in 2010 is they've gerrymandered the districts in such a way that it's guaranteed who's going to win those districts at this point. So the big thing, I think, the immediate effect would be in the primaries. Right now in the primaries, you can see here, again, there's a lot of money being put forth. So it's going to it'll level the playing field in some respects, and it'll give other organizations, other groups, the press might have more importance because people will go to them for information. the fact that you have maybe a staff of people who work for you, whether it be a governor, whether it be a House or Senate member, those people, you know, that might be able to push people over the edge. But, you know, that could, you know, could level the playing field. So it would be dramatic. And they have talked about that several times, you know, in the United States. The current courts have struck that down as again, political donations being freedom of speech. So, but it is not inevitable that, you know, that could be something we see at some point in time. I would not say that it is impossible here in the United States.
Well, to move on to another election that's going to be coming up, I am amazed at the number of people that are jumping in for the superintendent of education. That is going to be a huge race.
Yeah, and I haven't seen too much into that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of really big statewide races, and I have not seen too much on. And then that's probably
it's the number of people that I'm seeing that are jumping into this race. I don't see how actually anybody's going to stand a chance. It's going to have to be a runoff with the number of people that are getting into the race.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's really interesting because I've been coming from, you know, Kentucky and Ohio, that where I'm originally from and where I worked in politics. You know, we never had this runoff. So it was kind of like if you, especially in a primary, if you had too many people jump in, you know, it was a guaranteed, you know, slam dunk. With this runoff here, you know, in a lot of southern states, including South Carolina, it's very interesting to kind of see, because you kind of see, you know, if you don't reach the 50% marker, you're in a runoff. So it can level the playing field. So I mean,
well, the very fact that the superintendent of education for the state is not running is what has created all this posse here.
Yeah, and it kind of makes it anybody's game. So it's you know, especially with this whole runoff system, it could be very, very interesting to see, you know, what happens. And I think that goes, you know, with any race at all with the runoff system. It kind of does level the playing field, if you will, in such a way it doesn't guarantee you know, somebody, you know, the front runner isn't guaranteed. I was thinking back, what was it? You know, with Governor Haley and was it Gresham Barrett, when, you know, so it, again, it was,
runoff,
it was really interesting, you know, that runoff can be, you know, the deciding factor, particularly if you have kind of the big, you know, what they call the big mo in political science, momentum on your side, you know, it can, you know, you can beat the front runner. So there, that does happen. So that will be very, very interesting to see how that and many other, the statewide races, you know, end up when you have a whole lot of people. And then you have that, the runoff here as South Carolina does, very, very interesting. A lot more fun for me to watch from that perspective as a political scientist.
Now, of course, there will be Governor Haley and Vincent Shaheen going for the governor's race. I think that's going to be kind of, I'm going to say, a nasty race.
Yeah, I definitely do think.
Or dirty, again, whatever you want to call it, yes.
It could, you know, and I've read some things on that, and it's kind of interesting. You know, it's been kind of, you know, quiet here. Maybe
recently,
that's just, yeah,
well,
very, very recently. It's
quiet
been,
before the storm?
That could be it. That's kind of what I was thinking. But it's been fairly quiet, or either that, or I've been so, you know, so busy doing stuff. I guess that's one of the sad things, is you teach politics, and I don't get to, sometimes we get so busy into doing different research, teaching, and stuff like that. I don't get to follow, you know, follow the my true
sure.
calling, the interest. But anyway, that will be a really interesting race that's being looked at nationally. Because Governor Haley's been looked at for you know, as a potential, maybe somebody who runs for president, maybe somebody who could be a vice presidential candidate. So she's been looked at, you know, very widely across the country. So there are a lot of people that will be watching that race very, very closely. And I know that the Democrats are kind of itching to try to, and it was very, very close in 2010. And 2010 being a very good year for Republicans, so it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what ultimately happens with all this. And I think it will be kind of an ugly race. You have, you know, two people that you know, ran against each other. There's already a little bit of you know, blood in the water, so to speak, because they've already had kind of a you know, a go around with this, and so they're gonna kind of go back at it. It was interesting. We got to actually meet. We were at the South Carolina student legislature. We went and met Governor Haley. It was kind of nice, and she was. You could definitely tell that she was in full
campaign mode.
She was in full campaign mode. We did a group of students and a colleague of mine got to go to Charlotte to see the DNC, and Senator Shaheen was there, and you could even though he, you know, people had asked him and said, "Are you running for governor again?" You know, it was.
Right.
He's being coy. Very coy, but you know, it was very clear. You know, he had his sights set. He was fine tuning his message even then. And it was a group mostly of South Carolina students. So, you know, it was very, very clear from the outset that rematch was gonna happen. So it's gonna be very, very interesting. And I do look forward to this really starting to pick up at some point. And maybe I can only imagine right now we're in the calm before the storm. Before this really picks up, and again, I think that'll be something. Nikki Haley is really becoming, you know, a national figure. People know people from my back home and you know, in and around Cincinnati, you know a lot of actually South Carolina characters. I'm always interested when I go back to Cincinnati.
Characters, South Carolina characters. Okay.
Well, it's really, I mean, I think about Joe Wilson. There are still a whole lot of people with bumper cars in and around Cincinnati, you know, with his "You Lie." So, you know.
And now he walks across the commons there and everybody comes up and congratulates him. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, and you know, it's really, you know, people know Tim Scott, you know, back. So, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, national figures. And so with Nikki Haley being such a prominent national figure, you know, that brings, you know, it makes her a target. And again, kind of a darling, you know, endorsed by Sarah Palin, kind of, you know, a darling of a Tea Party. So, again, you know, that makes her a big target. And ultimately, some of the polling has shown, I think it will be a close race. I think the governor still has kind of an edge in this, but you know, I think it's going to be close regardless of how it goes. It's going to be close. And I think that you're going to see a lot of national money come in from the Republican Governors Association, Democratic Governors Association, to back their respective candidates. So, I can only imagine this is going to.
That sounds good for me, being in radio.
Oh yes, I think you are. They're in a good position here. Yes, I think you're definitely in a good position because I think you know. I don't think either one of them are going to be hurting for money. I think that it's going to come in because it's a big target.
It's actually a must win for Nikki Haley. She's got to win or it's going to be bad for her.
Any national aspirations she may or may not have, but if she does have them, end at that point if she loses. And you know, Democrats, in order to kind of show that they have, you know, a pulse in the Deep South, which they have not really shown that they have in quite some time, you know, this would be a really big pickup to come to South Carolina and you know, win the governor. And again, they could go in and say, look, you know, we can compete here in the South, and here's how you do it. And again, you know, you have different type of Democrat here in the South than you would maybe in the, you know, the Northeast or out in California. But so far they haven't been competitive. If Shaheen wins, you know, that could, you know, change the perception, you know, nationally about Democrats being able to win and you know, in the South. So it's going to be, I think it's a very big, it's a very, very important race, you know, not only for the state, but I think it's going to be watched nationally. So it's going to be, hold on to your seats. It's going to be very, very interesting.
It's going to be a ride, yes. Folks, a wild ride. Hey, I'm Ann Eller here with Dr. Chad Kinsella from Lander University. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones too. But we sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're talking, I tell you what, it's hard. It's hard when you have a lot of ideas coming out here this afternoon. We are here with Dr. Chad Kinsella, and we are talking politics this afternoon. He is a political science professor over at Lander University. So, you know, what do you think here? You know, everybody is already talking about the presidential election. Here we are. We've been talking about the stuff coming up, but the presidential. And, of course, the Democrats who is going to be the candidate. And of course, Hillary seems to be, and they had a PAC meeting down here in Columbia. What do you think at this point, taking a snapshot of right now, what do you think?
Hillary Clinton is, I don't know if she would like me to use this, the idea that she is the elephant in the room, maybe the donkey in the room perhaps, but really, it seems like, and if you look at any polling numbers, if she runs, she's well known, she's well liked among Democrats, you know. She was very, very close to, you know, in 2008 to being the nominee.
She lost any ground, particularly with Benghazi, for an election?
Benghazi is interesting. Benghazi is important. It cannot be denied that that is something that is.
Oh, come on. She said, what difference does it make?
Yes,
come on now, Chad.
I don't think that this is something that can. And again, they have tried several times to push this on, you know, push this away and say this is a non-issue, but it keeps coming up. That might hurt her. But I think the problem with Benghazi is, you know, Joe American or Jane American, it's a complex issue. I don't think. Understand it. And so I think, you know, as Republicans continue to try to push this issue, you know, and when I talk to my students about it, I think people are, you know, it's kind of like, well, I don't really get what happened there. And it's not, again, when you think about, you know, negative ad campaigns, it's got to be, you know, a couple of seconds. It's like, here's what she did and here's why it's wrong. It's not short enough. It needs, you know, some explanation, I think.
Well, how about if we brought Susan Rice out there? She was part of this.
Yeah, definitely. It's hard. I think it's hard for most Americans to kind of understand what is going on. It's kind of one of those things. I think political elites, to use that, maybe I shouldn't use, but anyway,
right.
Use that word. It's like, you know, we could understand that, you know, something happened here, and, you know, there, you know, needs to be.
Are you telling me what difference does it make is going to be her campaign?
I think
her slogan here, what difference did it make? Let's move on.
I think she could say, you know, almost ignore it. And I think if anybody tried to make hay out of that issue, which I think inevitably they will, I think, and this is opinion only, that they'll have a hard time, you know, trying to explain to middle America, if you will, you know, the regular, you know, people who vote, what happened and why they should care. I think it's a very difficult issue for, you know, regular folks, to use that word, to kind of grasp what happened and understand why Hillary was, you know, maybe culpable and all that. So I think it's a difficult issue. And I think it makes sense for most people to say, yes, something happened here. And you can't just, Hillary Clinton can't just sweep this under the rug and say, you know, it doesn't matter, makes no difference, throw her hands up. But I think it's hard to make like a negative ad campaign or something like that, make hay out of it, so to speak, political hay out of it, that will resonate with, you know, the average American, that will make sense. That's my opinion, because I think it's a fairly complex issue. I don't think that hurts. That might hurt her in the general election, potentially.
Okay.
But it all depends upon if they can make, you know, the 15-second, 30-second commercial out of it and people can say, okay, I understand it. And I think in the Democratic primary, I just think that she is so well-known and ultimately so well-liked. You know, she handled the whole 2000. She could have taken that to the convention. She didn't. Gave a fairly good speech endorsing Obama. It could have been better, but, you know, it's tough. So she did the right thing. She served as Secretary of State. So I think that she could win that Democratic primary fairly easily. The question will be, you know, will she run? She is getting older. There's a lot, you know. So I think that one of the key things that has to be thought about is what happens if she doesn't. I think that has to be, you know, there could be. Again, it seems like she would wrap up that Democratic primary. There's a very good chance where she may say she doesn't run. Then it's a wide open field, and it makes it a whole lot more interesting. You know, you have – I can't remember his name.
Is there anybody that stands out beyond Hillary?
Well, I mean, Joe Biden maybe, but I don't know that he'll do well as well as he
thinks. We're going to miss Joe, though, aren't we?
I will definitely miss Joe Biden, because his He is his zingers, and he is one of the most gaff-prone people, and it makes him very likable guy.
It's like, what difference does it make who's president when it comes to Obamacare? Which side are you on, Joe?
He is an interesting guy, but I don't know that he has enough to carry him for the presidency. You have a lot of really interesting governors out there. You have Cuomo out of New York, who has done a fairly good job in New York. He's been known for kind of being bipartisan and working with particularly Republicans in the state Senate. His name escapes me at this moment, but the governor of Montana is kind of seen as the anti-Obama, kind of being a more kind of the outsider outside of D.C., kind of maybe a more moderate to conservative Democrat. So,
should somebody be a governor that runs for president? This has been the big conversation that has come around a lot of times.
Typically, I mean, if you look at it historically, you have two people run for governor. Usually it's a governor for president is a governor or a senator. They do have governing experience, so that's something that they can come to the table and say, hey, you know, I've ran a state, let me take the next shot at running for, you know, I can run the country. You know, I've run this state, so it's a very logical argument. And again, if you look, President Bush was governor of Texas.
Sure.
And so, you know, that helped him. Now, I mean, Texas is one of the weakest governors, and I remember a whole lot of people trying to say that and way back in 2000 in the primary. It's like, oh, well, Texas governor really doesn't do a whole lot. But, you know, it's a big state. And, you know, he did come out there. And obviously, I mean, he won the Republican primary and was elected twice to as president. So, I mean, you know, I was Texas governor. I have some experience to offer the country. And so it's a logical somebody that we logically look to to run for president and be president.
Now, on the Republican side, there's a lot of action going on the Republican side. We've got Governor Chris Christie as one possibility.
Christie is out there. You have a couple of different governors. Bobby Jindal out of Louisiana
Are you saying that because of the spar that he put out there yesterday afternoon after their meeting?
Yeah, Tim O'Malley of Maryland. I think I didn't get to see the whole video clip of it, but you know, yeah, you know, he's got a little bit of fight, and you know, he's been a major, critic of the president,
and then Governor Haley to run as vice president with Jindal.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you could have yes, again, yes, a very, I guess, kind of ethnically driven. That wouldn't be good for Governor Haley. Maybe if Governor Haley wins, you know, is she
staying there?
You know, is she a possibility for, you know, any? It's kind of anybody's. There's several different senators out there. Marco Rubio. You have Senator Paul, who, like his dad, will probably run for president maybe multiple times. Again, he was right as I was leaving Northern Kentucky, he had gotten elected as senator. So the Republican field is very, very competitive.
Can the Republican field win the presidency?
Yes. I think the interesting thing that has happened, if you look at American politics, and again, it's maybe the American people, or I don't know what it is. It's kind of, you know, we go Democrat, Republican. It would stand to reason that 2016 would be a better year for Republicans. But again, they have to have the right person run. The climate still has to favor them. Does Hillary Clinton win the Democratic primary, and does that make her the inevitable, you know, winner of the, you know, the presidency? A lot of big questions out there. Can Governor Christie, who seemed like he was the front runner, get over this whole, you know, Bridgegate thing? So far, he's done okay. It seems like with it, he hasn't really even gotten that beat up in polls done in New Jersey.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
No problem. You know, what happens to him? But, you know, it's interesting if you think about presidential, really primaries for that matter. Way back in 2007, I remember I wrote a paper and I thought it was brilliant. I was talking about what was going to happen when Giuliani ran against Clinton for the presidency in 2008. That one quickly went to the trash heap because, you know, the two front runners ended up not getting. Giuliani, you know, was a front runner for a very long time for 2008, and I don't think he won any delegates to speak of. bad strategy in the primary. So,
is it too early to talk about 2016?
Well, it's never too early to talk about. So, no, I mean, but I think one of the key things that you always have to keep in mind, and that was a hard lesson for me as a, you know, a graduate student who was supposed to, you know, be able to
who knows it all.
Yeah, knows it all and supposed to be able to prognosticate and know everything about political science. You know, I did this whole big paper about, you know, it was Catholic voters and how they would vote for Clinton or Giuliani. It was pointless. So I got it both wrong. So I mean, wasn't even close. So one of the key things is, even though there are front runners right now, anything is possible. You know, there is a possibility, you know, Hillary Clinton may not run for one reason or another. You know, that makes the field, you know, wide open for the Democrats. Republicans, you know, Governor Christie.
The question I have is, why would she run? Why would she run?
You know, I sometimes wonder why anybody would run. I think, what was it? I think President Obama was in there and he had the governors and, you know, in there. And there were a lot of different governors on the Democrat and Republican side that had, you know, are, you know, people who could run in 2016. And, you know, he said something to the fact, he said, it's all yours. come and get it. I'm kind of done with it. So, why would she run? It almost seems like, you know, she would have probably an easier time in the Democratic primary. It seems like, again, all the polling numbers, and again, even though I'm contradicting myself, as I just said, that anything could happen, she's just a mammoth. And, you know, it's just a well-known name. You know, her and President Clinton still go across the country. And, you know, as Bill Clinton always called it, pressing the flesh, you know, he works on behalf of Democrats. There are people who owe, you know, Bill and Hillary a lot of favors.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if she does decide to run, you know, and I guess ultimately it runs down to, you know, her reasons will be of her own. I don't know if she will be, you know, fairly advanced in age by the time she does decide to run. So, and it might end up saying, she may say, you know, it's been a good ride. We've already had one Clinton. I'm getting older, and I've, you know, enjoy the twilight years as opposed to all the stress of the presidency. That could happen. And there's been some questions about, you know, her health and some of the things that have happened, where she's had, you know, what was it? She passed out at one point or went to the hospital, and there's been speculation that those were bigger episodes, medical episodes than they were made for. So all of those things are out there as a possibility. And if she doesn't run, you know, that really, I think, makes, you know, wide open field.
And makes your job a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Primaries are very, very interesting. And it's all about strategy. It's all about, you know, New Hampshire and Iowa and ultimately really South Carolina and winning those early states and getting the momentum. And you know, anything could happen. And you have a front runner one day who is out the next. Giuliani is the perfect example. Bet it all on Florida and lost big. So.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Chad, it's been a long time since we've had you on. We're going to have you on with a more regular basis. I think these type of conversations are fascinating.
Well, as a political scientist, I would definitely agree. This is definitely it's kind of interesting. This is one of the, you know, I can sit down and have a political conversation. My wife, I try to talk to her about politics, and she just said, you know, and
leave me alone.
Yes, leave me alone. You know,
let's talk about the kids.
Yeah,
right,
talk about that or The Bachelor or something, or else some sort of show that she wants to watch. And so that's one of the things. So it's always a pleasure, and it's a lot of fun.
Thank you very much, Chad Kinsella. Dr. Chad Kinsella was with us this afternoon from Lander University. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Do want to remind you tonight at 6 o'clock at the Veterans Auditorium there, they are having the dedication of a new case down there. But also, this is a very special ceremony for Eric Pfeiffer, who lost his life in 2005 serving our country. His dad and his mom are going to be there. We'd really appreciate it if you were there to show support. Please be there before 6 o'clock. Ceremony will be over by 6:30. It would mean a lot. Please be there. Thank you so much. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.